First of all, thank you all for coming tonight, and welcome to our very important meeting tonight with the title, Defend the Right to Protest Against Israeli War Crimes. On the 6th of January, 2009, the 9-year-old child, Mohammed Shakoura, from the northern part of the Gaza Strip, was among hundreds of Palestinians sheltering in Al-Fakhura United Nations School in Jabalia refugee camp when it was hit by shells from everywhere, tank shells, and Muhammad Basim Ahmed Shakoura was killed among 45 Palestinians inside the United Nations School. On the 10th of January 2009, five members of the Abed Rabbo family from a place called Izbet Abed Rabbo in the northern part of the Gaza Strip were hit by a missile from a drone, and four of them were killed and the fifth is still severely injured. Those are all civilians. On the 13 members of the Deeb family, as they were in their house together hiding, were hit this time by an F-16 missile from the air, obviously, and 10 of them were killed instantly, 3 are severely injured. Those are like few samples of the war crime cases that have been filed and brought before, hopefully, courts that will look into them and try to bring to justice, at least morally, the people who are responsible for these. Those are under international law war crimes, and that's why we are here. We are here to listen to speakers who have been protesting against war crimes that were committed by the Israelis in Palestine, in general, in Gaza last year, and as a result, they were imprisoned and they were charged with silly charges, racially aggravated conduct, etc. I don't want to speak more about it. I just leave the speakers to speak. We have tonight with us Yasmin Ali and Mary from the Gaza Demonstration Support Group, who will speak to us about the cases of the people who protested against the Israeli war crimes and then were imprisoned and were handed sentences that are not suitable for something they did out of the of their feeling of anger and sympathy and frustration and condemnation of what happened. And I'm very honored to have with us tonight Mick Napier, the chair of Scottish Palestine Solidarity Campaign, who's a relentless campaigner for the Palestinian rights, who's been everywhere, including Gaza itself, to support the Palestinians, express solidarity. He's been doing fantastic work. And again, he will tell us in his talk about the case of the Scottish activists who interrupted the Jerusalem Quartet concert in Edinburgh, and again they were arrested and charged with the same charges. So I don't want to take any more of the speaker's time, and I would like to invite first Yasmin from the Gaza Demonstration Support Group. So Yasmin, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Monsieur. Right, I'm going to stand up because I'm always too quiet. If you can't hear me, just tell me. I won't take offence at it at all. That's a very good introduction, Monsieur, on what happened during the Gaza bombing and the fact that we were demonstrating. So I'm just going to talk about the demonstrations which took place in December 2008 and January 2009. I'm sure many of you here either took part in a demonstration here in Sheffield or actually went down to London. I always had people to put hands up who took part in a demonstration around that time. Well, that's quite a lot of people. That's good. So something to relate to. Well, I'm sure in that case many of you will have been aware of the actual atmosphere of those demonstrations and the events that happened there and the problems people say that were arising because of the demonstrations, the diversity of the groups, the size of the demonstrations. It was actually my first time at any demonstration ever as well on the 10th of January. So I was not really being, quite embarrassing to say this now, but not really being politically aware or conscious or really done much up until that time. And then I had this urge to actually, maybe it's time to actually do something. And that was my way of actually, I don't know what difference I thought it would make, or, you know, was it going to stop the bombing in Gaza or something, but I felt the need to go to London, and I did. And I found it really, really inspiring, and it was great to be there. I wasn't expecting the numbers that were there at all. I remember turning up and there wasn't that many people, and I thought, well, that's good, but it's really cold and stuff. And then it was just a sea of people everywhere, but all age groups, all, you know, every colour and nationality. So I thought it was really good. I remember keep trying to catch up to this band playing. There were drummers, and my friend was saying, I'd keep trying to oh, come on, let's go into the bit. But, you know, I thought it was good, apart from being really, really cold. But we had a coach to catch back to Manchester, so we left reasonably early. I remember as we were leaving, it was getting quite dark, and I remember seeing lines of policemen just dressed all in riot gear and just running in the direction we were coming from, so we were going opposite to them. And I thought, oh, the atmosphere, you know, you could sense the atmosphere changing. And it was after that, while we were on the coach, our coach got delayed, and we found out people had been kettled. And does everybody know what kettling is? And kettling is illegal now. It's basically, it's a tactic that was used in demonstrations. I think on the 3rd of January, they got kettled underneath the tunnel. So basically, you got people in the tunnel, and you had police on either side, and they kept telling people to go back, go back. But obviously, they couldn't really go anywhere. So people, and the same happened outside the Israeli embassy on the 10th of January, where people were again confined into the space, and barriers were put up, and people weren't allowed to leave. So there's a lot of cases of police provocation going on. People were getting quite upset, and it was dark, it was cold. And wanted to leave, and they couldn't really leave at all. And then things did get out of hand a bit. I think people did trying to dismantle the barriers and things and trying to leave. But once they were allowed to leave, everybody that was there had to give their personal details and had to have the photograph taken. So this was hours later that they were doing it. And I'll tell you, it was really, really cold. I remember just being frozen and just being so relieved to get home that night and be warm. So it must have been a pleasant experience and stuff. Anyway, so the demonstrations ended, everybody went home. Leading up to, after the event, 119 people were arrested, predominantly up to about 8 months afterwards, but the last arrest, I believe, was sometime around December last year. So almost a year up to afterwards the demonstrations, these people were arrested. Now, the vast majority of these people are of Arab descent or Asian descent, and the average age is between 17 and 19, and the youngest person arrested was 12 years old. Out of these people, 78 have been charged and are currently going through the system at the moment, and the vast majority are Muslims as well. I think only one person is non-Muslim. Yeah. So let's. So what were they, and how they were arrested is quite significant as well. So they're quite young kids. I have actually got a picture of one of them, which I have cheated actually. It's from The Guardian, and it's well worth looking up the report, the article, and reading it. It's got quite a lot of interviews with the families and cases in it and stuff. So you can. That's Yahed Thabani. He's 18 years old. He was studying at Kingston University, but he's currently serving a year in prison for throwing a banner at the riot police, I think it was, and that's what his alleged crime was, and throwing a stick. And he also took a chair from Starbucks cafe to sit down, so he was charged. He was arrested at 5 o'clock in the morning during a dawn raid when the police didn't knock on the door and come in, they actually just came through. So everybody was asleep in the nightclothes and stuff. Nobody was allowed to get dressed. His older brother, who's 23, when he tried to get out of bed, three police officers knelt down on him, handcuffed him. He said, he handcuffed me so tight, he screamed. He asked if he could get dressed. Nobody was allowed to get dressed. Instead, they opened the windows. Their computers were confiscated, mobile phones, clothing. Police sat around playing on his iPod and making them ordering coffee and things. They are actually of Algerian descent. They've got political asylum, his family. So his dad, Badi's funny, says it's worse. His experience of this event is actually worse than what he experienced back home. I lose track by going backwards and forwards on this. So they realise they've come for Yahed's funny and he's arrested. He was charged with violent disorder, which carries a 5-year maximum jail sentence, but also with burglary. He was told if he pleaded guilty to the violent disorder offence, they would drop the burglary charge. He didn't really agree with the violent disorder. I don't think he realised that anybody that had pleaded guilty to violent disorder, what kind of sentences they were getting. So he didn't necessarily think it was fair, but he didn't want to have ex-prisoner and the prospect of future job, etc. on it. So he agreed because they told him he would get community service and at worst he would get a suspended sentence. What Yahya Tabani didn't realise was anybody that had pleaded guilty to violent disorder was not getting community service, was not getting suspended sentences. They were actually getting jail time. And they have, at the moment, it's looking like 18 people are serving between 18 months to 2.5 years in jail, and pretty much for things like what Yahya Tabani did, throwing a stick at the right police when they were there, or trying to dismantle a barrier to get out of it when they were being kettled to go home. There was another young man who said they were, got upset because the police had hurt a young old woman. They'd got upset with that. There's all sorts of things like this. This is the kind of thing these people have gone into prison for. We've got actually, I think, 21 people actually serving. There's been a few appeals, haven't there? 21 people in prison at the moment. Now, the other interesting aspect is all those that didn't plead guilty to it, the vast majority have been found not guilty, apart from one guy, Martin, who Mari will talk more about. But he's been found guilty of 2 counts of violent disorder. Sorry, I don't know how much to tell. Now, Martin is 2 weeks ago he was found guilty. He's due to get his sentencing later on this month. Now, he was actually assaulted by the police himself. He received a broken nose and 70 stitches on his head and internally as well, wasn't it? What was I going to say? So the other aspect of it is, which I find really, really disturbing and upsetting, is that it didn't matter if you had a British passport or if you were a British citizen or not. All these people had to surrender their passport because of the international element, which the judge ignored during sentencing. He completely didn't take into account why these people were there or what they were protesting about. And the fact that, you know, it's been long since these trials have been going on that we've established there were war crimes carried out in Gaza. He's not taken any of that into account. There was a young Palestinian lad who took part in it, who was charged. His family died during those bombings. He didn't take that into account. Yet they had to surrender their passports. So this is people like me. I was born here. I have a British passport. I always consider myself as British. Yes, I have Pakistani heritage. But it's like, well, okay, that's fine. But also the other aspect of it is they were issued with deportation orders and told, depending on the criminal, what the outcome of their charge was, they would be deported. Now, I don't know why they're going to deport these people too, because the vast majority of them probably have, you know, more of a, they feel more British than, I mean, it's, yes, people call it onto their heritage and that's what it's about, but they probably feel more British than anything. I know I certainly do. I've never, ever in my life felt like this disturb. And I think I said it before, when I was growing up, my parents were the first generation people here. They grew up and they were fairly old, I think early 20s when they came here. So I think they always had a bit of a distance between, and they was a bit scared to sort of completely integrate into society, because always, and you'd hear them sometimes, like, men sitting around going, oh, the first time of trouble and they took you out, you know. And you'd laugh at them and you'd joke at them going, don't be silly. Oh, Mum, don't worry about that. Of course, it doesn't matter if you're born here. You've got a British passport, haven't you? Just being silly. Oh, and it's just like, oh, my God, they're not that far off. And it's just like, what is this, the BNP coming to power? Where are they going to deport us to Mars and stuff? It's just like ridiculous. So I feel like, personally, it's just every single rule has just been broken on these, and they're trying to hide it. I think they know what they've done is wrong, because initially we had mass sentencing taking place on one day, and a couple of those happened, and that's the only time it hit the media, and we got quite good coverage in The Guardian. Newsnight picked it up. After that, it was just, which made our life quite easy actually, because we knew when the cases were happening so we could turn up. But after that, they've actually been staggering them. So it's actually quite difficult, and it evokes less of a response when you've got 78 kids just sort of being hidden and just been going through the court system. But now the other thing that aspect of it is they're doing, the appeals have actually started coming through. One appeal has already taken place and been won. I think there might have been one today as well. I think I saw that in the media. So I think they know pretty much once these appeals come through, these cases are going to fall apart. So they're actually being delayed. And people are being told, you can spend, your appeal's delayed, you can spend this X amount of time in prison and wait for your appeal. Or you can actually leave now on the early release scheme, but you will be tagged. I'm not sure, like, what kind of, you know, you won't blame these kids if they want to leave prison now and just say, I'd like to go home, actually. Because a lot of these kids, it was their first time at the demonstration. Actually, a lot of them said to the judge, we've learned our lesson. We won't ever go to a demonstration again. And he just didn't take anything into account. He actually said he was going to issue deterrent sentences. Deterrence from what? I guess it's deterrence from protesting again. But if somebody's saying they're not going to protest again, then you don't really need to issue them a deterrent sentence, unless it's for people like myself, of course. But no, that's not going to happen. And the other aspect of it I'd like to point out is a lot of these people were in education. They were in university. They were in college. A lot of them, the judge himself actually said they were of exemplary character. A lot of them had really good character references. So all these things, the fact that they were first-time offenders and they had no criminal record, people were giving them outstanding character references, everything was just ignored and given these political deterrent sentences. There's a lot of, I think there's three aspects of it for me personally, looking at the cases. There's one, obviously, quite clearly racism, quite clearly Islamophobia going on. And for me personally, I think there's obviously the fact that they were there protesting against the Israeli government. So that's why I think I feel quite strongly about the need to do this. And that's why I sort of got involved in this campaign, A, because I was one of those people there. And I thought, I've got young brothers the same age as that. It could have, you know, could be one of them there. But also as a pro-Palestinian activist, I have actually been quite a good activist, if I might say so, since December 10th of January. I kind of felt quite bad that I was involved in a movement that had ignored these people, and we weren't doing anything. And I remember going to this weekend we had of poor Palestinian activists and saying, why has nobody done anything? And I felt quite disheartened and sort of actually considered leaving because I felt so strongly about it. But then to my surprise, I realised I was in a room full of people and nobody actually knew about them. That's why nobody had done anything. And once they found out, they were actually very, very positive and wanted to do something about it. So that's really good. It's horrible to know you're a movement that doesn't take care of its own and will just leave you behind and if you get into trouble and stuff. So what can you do? I should talk less about myself. So I'd really, there's a lot of work that needs doing for these cases. They've not been getting a lot of attention. We're building support for them. Murray and I are involved in a campaign which was predominantly set up by just a group of people just that were concerned about the cases when we heard about them. It didn't look like anything was being done about them. Nobody was really paying that much attention. So we kind of, for various different or personal reasons, had some kind of motivation to do something about it. So it's pretty much a grassroots kind of organisation. It doesn't have any political affiliation or anything like that to it. We've been providing, one of the things that we have been good at is any case that we have been, we found out about and we were sort of finding out, trying our best to find out all the cases, is providing support for families in court and attending. The other aspect is we've managed to, given the circumstances, get quite a good comprehensive information on the cases. And we have a website which has a lot of any media coverage that they've had is on there. We have reports from when we attend court there, a summary of everybody that's attended, what they were charged with and the sentences and things. But I'm here today really to try and encourage other people and spread the word, because I've been out campaigning about these things and it really, really surprises me, because, you know, when I do these talks, it comes like, I think one of the things I forget is, for me, it's almost like, I know the figures now, it's like 5 people pleaded not guilty, 4 found not guilty, 1 of them proved guilty. So I just assume people know, and then I'm actually out talking to people, and the vast majority of people don't know. And then I assume Muslims must know, this is Islamophobia, there must be, you know. And I was out campaigning in Rusholme in Manchester, and I didn't meet a single person that knew about the cases. So one of the things, if nobody goes away and wants to do anything else today, is to actually talk to people about it and raise awareness about it. But the other aspects, I think, there's lots and lots of things that can be done. We are coming across cases where people are beginning to need legal assistance as well, so we'll be looking to raise money for that if anybody wants to do fundraisers. The other aspect is to actually lobby MPs as well. There was an early day motion put in by George Galloway and Jeremy Corbyn, so you can ensure MPs signed up to that. What else would I like them to do?
If people come down to London, come to the hearings.
If you're in London, you can do hearings. But also we've been putting up leaflets and things on our website, so, you know, you can print them off and distribute them. We're going to be putting some posters up as well up there, so you can print them off and put them up around places as well. I think we need to make build some pressure on this and let the judge know that it's not acceptable what's going on. We won't stand for racism, we won't stand for Islamophobia, and these are our civil rights being violated here. Everybody should be allowed to protest without being criminalised like this. These are young people, and we always complain about young people are too apathetic, we can't get them to do stuff, yet when you get them to do something, we bang them up in prison for it. I think we should all do something with these kids, really. Murray's going to give you a personal answer.
Evening, everybody. It's nice to see you all. Yasmin, I just got to say, Yasmin's been one of the key campaigners in the campaign. She's like on the email daily. She's an incredible organiser. So can I get you to give her a big round of applause? Like Yasmin, I was on the big demo down in London, last year, and I wasn't on the ones outside the Israeli embassy, but I had friends who were and heard about how it went down. However, earlier this year when I heard about what was happening to the young people being arrested, I was like, wow, what? Just really like, what's going on? And then I heard that one of my friends, she's a Somali young woman, she works with a youth project that I'm connected to in London. I've known them for a long time. And they work with young refugees across London, and her brother and his best friend have been sent to prison. They're 18 years of age. And I was stunned when she told me this. Like, these are good kids, you know, like good kids. they're active in their community. They helped run a youth project in Harrow in North London, you know. It was their first demonstration. When I heard that, I was like, right, I'm getting involved in this campaign. And likewise, Yasmin and my friends and comrades in London, they started to organise. And the first court hearing I went to was at the end of March. And it was the big one when I think they sent, where they had six people in one day. And they sent three of them down. And I sat in on a couple of the hearings. And I literally, like, call me naive, but I've never seen nothing like this in my life. The judge, you know, these are people, like Yasmin said, they threw a stick or an empty water bottle. I mean, compared to what happened in Gaza, like, it doesn't even compare. It's a damn disgrace. And I was ashamed as an English person that this was happening in a fucking democracy. I still can't get my head around it. So I went to that, and me and my mates were like shocked, like, what? What's going on, you know? And we were talking to the families of the people there, and, you know, they were in tears. And my friend whose brother got sent down, you know, she was saying when they went to court, the mom... Sorry.
Sorry.
She was saying when they were in court, you know, the mom couldn't believe it. She was like, what's going on? They could not believe that their children were being sent to prison for something as ridiculous as this. And just to say a bit more about this youth organisation, you know, it's traumatised the young people in this group. All of them come here as refugees, you know, escaping political persecution. And what the hell happens when they go to one demonstration and throw a bloody stick because they're being kettled and battered by the police, you know? My friends are devastated. Like, the young people in this group are truly devastated. You know, they weren't feeling safe anyway. Most of them are young Muslims. They weren't feeling particularly safe or welcome in this country anyway, but this is another hammer on top of their head around that. You know, it's disgraceful. And so, you know, that's been one thing, and very painful to be around that, you know, to witness that and to talk to these young people and my friend. And again, like Yasmin was saying, this young brother, like, he was about to go to university. He was in his last year of his A-levels. And the judge, I heard him with my own ears. He was saying, oh, you're an exemplary character, but, you know, this is a deterrent sentence. You know, it's disgusting. It truly is. And then coming on to the trial that I went to recently of Martin Askew, I went there, like, I don't know, three or four times during the week trial. And me and my friends and comrades in London, we, you know, got to know his family. We sat with them, had lunch with them. It was horrible. It was devastating. His wife was in tears. They've got three little kids, you know. His mum was there as well. And interestingly, what I found interesting too, is that the only two white people who they sent down were working class guys who converted to Islam. I mean, what the hell does that say? You dare disobey your master? This is what's going to happen to you. You dare side with those people over there? We're going to send you down too. I mean, like, so we were, you know, we were talking to him and he was giving his testimony. I seen a picture of him that we sent around on our email group. The police battered him with a riot shield. He had a gash in his head. They almost killed him. You know, his head was streaming with blood. And who's gone to prison? Or who's going to prison? You know? Like, the police, what I found diabolical in the courtroom was that the police were kind of, they were sort of saying, oh, we were fearful of our lives and rubbish. They were dressed like Robocop. What the hell? It's just ridiculous. You know, the judge was all kind of quite sympathetic and, you know, oh, poor police officers. Honestly, I found it really hard to keep my composure. So angry. And like Martin, you know, he was talking about... Oh, and interestingly as well, much of the defence, apart from his lawyer, I think, and maybe one or two others, they didn't talk about the situation in Gaza. They didn't even mention it. And I couldn't believe it the first time I went. Like, that is the whole reason this sordid affair is happening, you know? They didn't even mention it. I found that disgraceful, and there was no mention of the police brutality at all, like nothing, until Martin's trial. That's the first time I heard it. You know, and Martin, you know, he was talking about being on the phone to families in Gaza who were just, you know, being bombed, and children crying and stuff like that. He's a deeply humane man, like, big heart, amazing man. And anyway, yeah. And he had also, he had amazing character references. A guy from The Guardian gave a brilliant character reference, a friend of his. Guy Ritchie, he's a filmmaker, he'd worked with him for years, he gave a phenomenal reference for him. But blatantly, the judge was like, and the jury as well, what was interesting was, I was there for the jury selection. There was two Asian people, one black woman, and the rest of them were white. They got rid of the two Asian people, selected 11 white people and one black woman to judge this man's case. I mean, what does that say? Like, blatant racism. Totally. You know, it was obvious what they were going to do. To me, at that point, I was like, this doesn't look good. So during the week, you know, we spend a lot of time with the family. And I think that's one of the most... Okay, sorry. That's one of the most important things about this campaign for me, is being there with the families, being in, going to the hearings as well. You know, the families were saying to us, you know, thank you so much, just having people there. But also the pressure. The judge notices us, like, he's made remarks to the campaigners as if to say, okay, I know you're here, I know you're watching me, you know. So I think that pressure put on the judge and on the political system is really important as well. But I think it is, like Yasmin was saying, it's really, really important to just organise around the country. You know, it's not just about it. With this case, it's predominantly about young Muslims being politically persecuted, but it affects everybody too, and we should be supporting our own. So I'd really, I mean, we're going to do a barbecue this Sunday for the families, including Martin and his family, just as a sort of solidarity thing to bring folks together so they can support each other. But I think, you know, if you ever come to London, please, please get in touch. Fundraisers, you know, we need to get the word out about this. It's a damn disgraceful situation. And we need to kick ass and put as much pressure up as possible, because it's a really, I was in floods of tears, like, after Martin's. I've never seen anything like it in my entire life. It's devastating. But all the more reason for us to organise around it and really come together around this. So please do get in touch with me and Yasmin. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben. I'm not